Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello all of you beautiful people, Jules here for WhatCulture.com, and as they always say, history is written by the victors. But you know what? Today we're focusing on the losers, because secretly, even without claiming championship victories or standing tall at the end of things, they actually sometimes manage to rise above those that actually pinned them to the mat. Strange, I know, but let's check it out. As I'm Jules, this is WhatCulture.com, and these are 10 wrestlers who got over by losing. Number 10, Darby Allin. Darby Allin's early win-loss record was uneven by calculated design. In addition to getting Darby over as an emerging, spirited talent, it put the very notion of achievement over. How difficult it was to actually ascend. The dissonance between his record and his performance level asked a very probing question. What else does he have to do? With the fundamental answer to everything being, he has to win. He took Cody to the limit in an inspired match at Fyter Fest in 2019, in that it positioned Darby as a future player and established the drama of a time limit draw unfamiliar to modern US audiences. In the Dynamite era, Darby defeated the fellow mid-card pack of Kip Sabian, Sammy Guevara, but lost to the established top-tier players like Pac and Jon Moxley. But he showed out in those defeats, which were deftly orchestrated to put him over as a man on the cusp of being the big time. Mox had to put him away with the top rope paradigm shift. Pac had to use the steps. Allin was defeated twice by Cody to further a rivalry indebted to the Great Mizawa vs. Kobashi series. When Darby finally ascended at Cody's expense, it was going to mean much more than any rocket-strapped push, because he had to earn it. And he did at Full Gear 2020. In a sensational match structured around the next chapter in mind, Allin was the top-tiered skilled wrestler in that ring, despite the patronizing misgivings of Taz. Number 9. Tomoaki Honma. Tomoaki Honma was positioned in New Japan's seminal 2010s era as a lower card enhancement talent. Endearing and almost awkward mechanically, he had more fire than talent, or maybe success is the better word looking at his remarkable rise. A last minute G1 Climax 2014 substitute for the injured Kota Ibushi, Honma lost every last one of his 10 block matches. The booking was as logical as it was inspired. It made sense for him to lose, but the New Japan fans were dazzled by his fighting spirit and his sheer refusal to stop fighting, even when it was far beyond pointless. A peak Honma high spot, basically whenever he was in a fight with Tomohiro Ishii, meant so much more than most, even if, or even because, he executed those moves with such little grace. He didn't ascend the turnbuckle because he was a gifted aerialist ready to launch into a high-risk attack. He didn't fly from the top rope because he had particularly low regard for his own safety. He just desperately wanted to win, to prove himself more than the loser his dire record all but confirmed he was. With his Kakeshi finish, he would hold his body rigid and flop into a flying headbutt with zero success. But it was as clever as it was dumb. The hit and hope of pro wrestling moves, when he finally hit it, felt like a shared celebration. You could not be more happy for him. Number 8. Barry Horowitz. You know, it's incredible comparing the WWF of 1995 with that of 2021. WWE in 2021 is blessed with a just, ridiculous ridiculously stacked roster loaded with guys who used to get over everywhere they worked. That's what got them signed, yet only a handful of the 200-plus theoretical all-star team actually make the slightest bit of damn difference. Roman Reigns, Drew McIntyre, do two fingers count as a handful here? Sasha Banks and Bayley were moving the needle to an extent in 2020, but their star power has dimmed considerably. Rhea Ripley is popular down in NXT, but they've just mishandled her badly. But the WWF of 1995 was not as blessed, not at all, and yet it was booked by a man who at least made his unfashionable product make sense. He was resourceful, canny, and that led to the fondly remembered underdog prevailing tale for the lowly Barry Horowitz, who was so earnestly endearing and actually quietly skilled that he got himself over. Now, Barry Horowitz was, as Bret Hart would say, a loser. He was stigmatized as one as well, which actually made the storyline and differentiated it nicely from the 1-2-3 kid deal. He was just that guy who lost all the time, until that is, he won at the expense of the egotistical gym rat Skip in a 3-match series, and the crowd pop for it was utterly brilliant. Number 7, Kurt Angle. The Kurt Angle conniption fit was almost Seinfeldian in its brilliance. Watching people blow a bloody gasket is funny, it just is, and Angle was phenomenal at it for two reasons. He was a very, very intense individual, and yet he had absolutely no issue whatsoever about showing himself up. Watching Angle realize that he made a right tit out of himself and scream, "Shut up!" at taunting crowds, that was priceless. And he still sold the gravity of those defeats. They pissed him off. He was never a clown. He just had a rather funny way of wanting to win. And it worked so well because Angle was such a killer in that ring that he could get his heat back just by removing the straps of his gear. Everything he did looked like death. And thinking on it now, there's probably never been a pro wrestler quite as valuable as he was. To prove this, his record in 2000, it was pretty spotty. He lost to Taz at the Royal Rumble, he lost the European and Intercontinental titles at WrestleMania, he lost to The Big Show at Backlash, he won the King of the Ring, but it really only enabled him to do more comedy "Did I Summon You" gimmicks before he was mugged off by a defensive and rather boring Undertaker at Fully Loaded. And yet, despite these defeats, he was still worth the SummerSlam main event and the WWF title by October at No Mercy, because he was too entertaining and too over for any loss record to hold him down. Number 6, Mick Foley. Mick Foley was so good that he convinced several wrestling fans that Randy Orton was a top-level worker for 17 years. And while that's only slightly facetious and hardly consensus, Orton is received about as subjectively as any performer ever. Foley was so phenomenal in the role that it's far easier to argue that Backlash 2004 remains Orton's career peak. Foley was the best guy to lose ever. He sold everything like death and absorbed more gruesome punishment than any big league star before him. But he was also a phenomenal brawler with one of the best working punches that you'll ever see. He was as great at doling out the punishment as he was taking it. So much so that a victory over him meant so much more than blood-soaked highlight reel moments. The emerging WWE star got over by surviving and then maiming Mick Foley, not just by defeating him. The Rock, Triple H, Edge, Foley's legacy as a selfless star maker is forever established. He is a legend because he created more legends. Number 5, Kenta Kobashi. Few careers have been curated with as much elegance as that of Kenta Kobashi. A hulking specimen, he was initially rejected by All Japan Pro Wrestling, with his dreams crushed by a lack of sporting credentials at the high school and college level. But the drive that saw him ascend to greatness was inherent and unwavering. He started working out in a gym near the All Japan Pro Wrestling office, and worked so hard, harder than anybody else, that the owner was sufficiently impressed enough to recommend him to Giant Baba upon learning of his ambition. Baba was similarly impressed. Kobashi was said to have such a likable disposition and unreal work ethic that Baba just knew that a crowd was going to love him. And this was some premonition. Recognizing him as a prodigy, Baba penned an arc designed to maximize the living hell out of his innate sympathy. Kobashi lost all 63 of his first matches, but was allowed to shine in some sort of weird coded message. Prime Kobashi was an all-timer of a babyface. He didn't so much have fire in him as he set everything around him ablaze. For those 63 matches, fans were drawn steadily to the ignition, ensuring that the investment, when it finally paid off, would last a lifetime. Number 4, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Imagine if this version of Vince McMahon was tasked with booking the finish to the legendary WrestleMania 13 match between Steve Austin and Bret Hart. Jesus H. Christ. He wouldn't have booked a stipulation that demanded a decisive finish for starters, or he'd have just paid no mind to it a la Hell in a Cell 2019. Austin would have rolled Hart up and then just left the ring suddenly, or alternatively, to protect Austin, Hart would just disqualify himself. Or perhaps Stu Hart would have distracted Austin, leading Austin to wear night vision goggles and beat him up on the next night of Raw, which actually seems pretty awesome now that I think about it. Actually, you know what, never mind. Anyway, what actually got Austin over as a megastar was doing a job clean in the middle of the ring. He had been dismantled strategically by Hart, and the stipulation of that match was utter genius, because there was no great shame in losing in his opponent's domain, but Hart also had to go that one step further, betraying his code as a sportsman. Austin tasted his own blood, pain shooting through his joints, and he roared in anguish. Pro wrestling has never felt as real as it did in that climactic minute. This finish gave the WWE so much to work with. Austin was made as the defiant, toughest babyface ever. Hart won and embarked on the best character run of his career. He was the next WWF champion after The Undertaker, but Austin was the next rising top star. And that's what happens when wrestling means something. Number 3, Daniel Bryan. Though you probably not want to revisit it, Daniel Bryan's 2013-14 arc felt like the last time that WWE fans had the heart and agency to make a difference. It was a special time that unfortunately doesn't really hold up to repeated viewing, and really, that about describes it. Bryan was the star of a bad and counterproductive television program. That's why all of this happened. The fans were right there, and they are correct today. And it didn't all start with Bryan's loss to Sheamus in 18 seconds at WrestleMania 28. That finish was rejected so emphatically because Bryan's connection with the fanbase had already been formed. But that moment brought into focus just how much it wasn't going to happen unless the fanbase willed it into existence. And so they did, by making it very clear who they liked by chanting his catchphrase at the WWE every single time they could. This wasn't a chant for Bryan, it was a resentment against the WWE. And that 18-second match was the flashpoint. Number 2, Sammy Guevara. Poised for a breakout babyface run in 2021, Sammy Guevara has proven his value in a heel role without really winning anything, though Le Sex Gods weren't unfamiliar with the pay window as a tag team. A relative unknown ahead of AEW's launch, Guevara mildly impressed on the early pay-per-view circuit, but one couldn't label him as a standout. That Cody vs. Sammy Guevara match graphic marking the debut of Dynamite was somewhat puzzling, and while it made sense, AEW's insistence that Sammy would replace Cody as Chris Jericho's full gear opponent in the event of his victory failed to convince. It was so incredibly unlikely as to be almost patronizing. In 2021, however, Sammy Guevara versus Chris Jericho is a major upper mid-card pay-per-view level attraction because Guevara has ruled as a heel on an episodic TV wrestling show. The smarmy face, the ability to pull you in, the underrated, unhinged body language, Guevara got over by losing simply because you wanted to see him lose. He was the little shit with the punchable face, and he played that role incredibly well. Hangman's buckshot, Moxley's paradigm shift, Luchasaurus's tombstone facebuster. It just never got tiring watching him eat the mat every single time. And number 1, Dustin Rhodes. Now, where Sammy got over as the young but inexperienced stud, Dustin Rhodes was in his inverse. AEW recognized his value simply where the WWE did not. In a horrendous alternate universe too close to our own, Goldust is gnashing his teeth on Legends Night and literally bled that value all over the ring at Double or Nothing 2019. Now, Dustin lost here in an emotional bloodbath, but in doing so, he crystallized his legacy as a great. But AEW arrived, and he arrived at it too late for him to become a lasting main event star. Everybody knew that, but he's still so great that he builds on that legend most weeks and uses it to transfer his aura to the younger set. It's okay for Dustin Rhodes to lose, especially because he sells on the contrary so well, because nobody will ever think less of him for doing so. He's Dustin Rhodes. He's as good once as he ever was, and AEW have never lost sight of that by beating him too often. This is why you form stables with a clear pecking order. This is why a promotion should embrace the young and the old, whether they're deemed ready for TV or whether they've been judged to have outlived their usefulness. This variety drives storylines. If a faction needs heat, if a giant needs to look like a killer, there's no better arm to break nor a forehead to slash than Dustin Rhodes.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.